रामाय रामभद्राय रामचंद्राय वेदसे रघुनाथाय नाथाय सीतायाः पतये नमः. अयोध्याकांड चैप्टर नंबर 30, द ट्रायंफ ऑफ लव. द रेसिटेशन बिगिंस नाउ. Then Sita spoke to Rama bitter and taunting words, for she cared not to be lured into consenting to his leaving her behind him. She was resolved to secure her end anyhow. He was a paragon of valor and heroism, but he was also her own sweet dear lord, the object of her all-absorbing love, and she was stung to the quick that he ever entertained the ideal of parting her from him, and at his obstinate refusal to grant her earnest and repeated prayers. "Have you any idea of what a sorry figure you will cut in the eyes of my father should he come to hear that you had gone to the forest and left me behind you? Your supernal beauty is your sole refuge, your only weapon, your only asset, with which you steal away the hearts of us poor women. Kindly tell me whether you have anything else about you worth noticing. Janaka, my father, is very much inclined to the path of action, as is plain from the saying, great men, like Janaka, have won the supreme goal solely by treading the path of action. Hence, he will not entertain the idea of a householder living apart from his wife even for a moment. Besides, he is not, like you, a novice in the art of government, a stranger to the joys and sorrows of others, but he is the ideal ruler over many countries and the watchful father to countless millions that dwell in them. Should it come to his ears that you left me behind you, all out of impotence to protect a weak woman, he would most naturally exclaim, 'Alas, fool that I was to be so duped! My eyes were blinded to the truth. I have unwittingly ruined the life of my darling girl by giving her in marriage to one whom I conceived to be a man. The scales have fallen from my eyes. He is but a woman under a miserable garb of a man. Would he have ever given me to you for a wife if he had the least suspicion of the truth? Alas, what blind dupes the people are! I hear them say on every side, "Unparalleled glory and valor adorn Rama, even as light and life abide in the sun, crowned with a thousand rays." It is a naked lie. It is a child of crass ignorance. I see nothing extraordinary or wonderful in Rama. If truth must be spoken, he stands far down in the scale of ordinary men. Manu enjoins the head of a family to maintain it in comfort and ease, even though he has to incur countless sins therein. I do not see that you have burdened yourself with any such responsibility. Have the kindness to inform me what grievous sin you have committed for my sake and repent so keenly. You are my sole stay and support. You are my only refuge. I never took to any other for advice, guidance, or protection. I cannot construe your unwillingness to take me with you in any other way than that you are mortally afraid of someone who is sure to cause you grievous harm if I follow you to the woods. But who knows better than I that the fire of your wrath consumes everything that stands before it, even like the fire of dissolution? I am curious to know who those wonderful persons are that cause you so much fear and apprehension. I request you to remember that I am your loyal and faithful servant. Your lightest word is a law unto me, and I follow you wherever you go, even as Savitri, the faithful wife, followed her lord Satyavan into the dread regions of death. Rank me not with the common lot of women who are born to ruin a noble house. My heart has and will have no place for any other god other than your noble self. That is by reason itself enough for me to claim to come with you. I try to live a life of a faithful wife. Times out of count have I sworn to you by everything that I hold sacred that you are my love, my lord, my god, my everything. Yet you advise me all seriously about my deportment and attitude to Bharata. Verily, I begin to suspect you of an inhuman and base conspiracy to make me over to Bharata, even as an infamous pander or professional pimp who makes a wretched living by hiring out to others the young confiding wife whom he inveigled into a marriage and had allowed to live with him through long years, all unsuspectingly. Rama, I freely and ungrudgingly allow you to the monopoly of the favor and service of him whom you flatter, of him to whom you would make me over. I do not enter into the lists with you as a rival. I have not fallen so low. I have not been reduced to such abject destitution and misery. You shall not go to the forest unless I go with you. Bury yourself in the dark woods, enter the order of ascetics or recluses, ascend to the bright seats of the immortals. I am ever with you. I care not to argue further, I care not to hear more. I have no other but a woman's reason. I think it so because I think it so. Fear not that I would feel fatigued in the least when I travel with you, as I used to do during my walks in the pleasure gardens here. Sharp grass, reeds, and thorny trees are to me but soft cotton, a finely tanned skin of the antelope, if you are by my side. The fine dust blown upon me by fierce gusts and gales will be to me an excellent sandalwood paste. What pleasure have I here, reclining on delicately woven rugs or carpets, or cunningly fashioned couches, sofas or lounges, more than the delight and comfort I would feel when reposing on the soft emerald grass in the woods? The fruits and roots and leaves gathered by you for me will taste as sweet as ambrosia, be they enough or scanty. The flowers and the fruits of varying seasons are mine to enjoy. No shadow of a memory of my home or parents will ever cross my mind. I assure you I will cause you no trouble, not the slightest, when I live with you in the forests. You will have not the least difficulty in taking care of me there. My heaven is where you are. Apart from you, I am in the darkest of hills. You cannot but take me with you if you have the least idea of the extent of my love to you. The very word fear is unknown to me when I go to the forest with you. If you still persist in your inhuman and obstinate resolve to leave me here, I will kiss the poison cup rather than be handed over to the tender mercies of Bharata or any other enemy of mine. Sure am I of a natural death here after your departure to the woods. It is decidedly better for me to cast aside this unworthy body when you are by. Alas, powerless am I to endure this sharp-toothed grief even for a second, 10 years, then 3 years, then 1 year, and then all counted 14 years of dreary darkness, unrelieved by a ray of your radiant presence. Oh, what a hell! Never can I live through it. And with senses adrift and a heart shaken to its very depths, Mother Sita fell upon her husband's neck and wept aloud, a sight to melt a statue of adamant. The words of Rama pierced deep into her soul, even as a cow elephant in the forest stricken to the heart with poison shafts. Her long restrained tears flowed in torrents like fierce flames from the attrition of fire sticks. The crystal drops fell from her eyes in rapid succession, even as the pearly dew drops from the blossoming petals of a lotus. Her charming face that puts to shame the spotless moon with its large and lustrous eyes faded at the touch of the hot scalding tears, even as a tender lotus plant violently torn from its cool watery bed. Rama clasped to his breast his grief-stricken wife in a transport of love, and chased away from her sorrow and despair by his sweet and consoling words. Sita, and you really believe that it matters anything to me if I had a place in the highest heaven while you lie weeping here? As to fear, I laugh at Narayana. I have no life apart from you. Afraid of taking you with me? Nay, I but seem to refuse, since I was in the dark, about your real views on the subject. You need not go to seek for any other reason. I tell you that you are made to live with me in the forest. A man of undaunted heart and unclouded intellect will spurn the idea of renouncing his bright fame. I will not, and the truth of it is, I cannot give you up. My ancestors, the royal sages, dwelt in the forest as hermits, and their wives lived with them. It is but the dharma of my line that I follow, and no newfangled notion of mine. So come with me, even as the lady Suvarchala accompanies her lord, the sun god. My sire has made a promise to Kaikeyi and has ordered me to see to its fulfillment. So I cannot but go to the forest. Go I must. Our highest dharma consists in obeying our parents and carrying out their behests. Life to me has no meaning except as its loyal and whole-souled practice. You may suggest that we may remain here and secure the highest heaven by devout worship offered to the deity. But, unfortunately, that deity is omnipotent, independent, and not amenable to the influence of those that worship him. Besides, it never expresses its commands or desires to us in person. Our parents and guru are amenable to the prayers of those that serve them. Besides, they command us in person. There is no reason in putting them away and preferring the deity as the object of our worship. The three worlds are open to one who devotes his life to the service of his mother, father, and guru. He knows nothing purer, so we should ever reverence and respect them in preference to others. Right speech, charity, hospitality, and the numerous rites and sacrifices conducted with ample gifts pale before filial service in conferring good upon us. There is not the least shadow of a doubt that loyal service to our parents and guru ensures for us a happy stay in the heaven, wealth, knowledge, and offspring, and joys of life. The great ones who bend all the powers of their mighty selves to the faithful service of their parents and regard it as the be-all and end-all can have for the mere asking of it the heaven of the gods or of the Gandharvas or the Goloka or the Brahmaloka itself. My father is the loyal servant of truth. His feet never stray away from the path of dharma. His lightest word is God's degree unto me, and it is even the dharma followed by our ancestors. I was against taking you to the forest with me, as I was unaware of your true inclination in the affair. But now that I know of your unshakable resolve to share the dangers of exile with me, I am ready and willing to take you with me. It is written in the book of fate in the beginning of time that you are to live with me in the forest. So come along and assist me in the discharge of my dharma. I cannot praise too high your noble efforts to accompany your husband. It does honor to me and to my race. So make the necessary preparations for our departure from Ayodhya. The happiest heavens is but bitter poison to me without you. Give away gold and gems to the Brahmanas, and let the poor of the city have free access to the entire disposal of our stores and provisions. Delay not, but look sharp. Let the Brahmanas come first and receive from you priceless ornaments, rare cloths, curiously wrought statues and toys of gold and silver, beds and conveyances, and their consent taken, let our servants, dependents, and retainers have the rest. Sita was delirious with joy that her husband was gracious to her and was pleased to take her with him to the forest. So she set about to arrange for their departure to Dandaka. Her liberality was something inconceivable, boundless. Besides, her husband has given her carte blanche to distribute their vast wealth among those that might ask for it. So she began to give away profusely and without stint gold, silver, coin, gems, corn, clothes, beds, and conveyances to the righteous Brahmanas. Mangalam Kaushalendraya Mahaniya Gunapte Chakravarti Dhanurjaya Sarva Bhaumaya Mangalam.